LA night races of the 2011 chase went down this past Saturday at NASCAR's home track, Charlotte Motor Speedway. This is the Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu. Welcome to week 5 of the Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Ray Ray. This past race at Charlotte Motor Speedway brought out every emotion on the table. There was disappointment to the happiness everywhere we turned. We saw the heartbreaking pit road call that killed Jimmy Johnson's night, leaving him 35 points behind leader Carl Edwards, to the thrilling finish that landed Chase sleeper Matt Kenseth the victory. Along with the usual Chase updates, tonight's show will highlight Matt Kenseth and his chances on being the Sprint Cup champion in the other Chasers' days. We are also going to have a special garage talk this week. We aren't going to be talking about the going on in the garage, but we want to take a little time to pay tribute to Dan Weldon, an IndyCar racer that tragically died this past weekend on Sunday, 11 laps into the Indy 300 at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Terribly sad. We're going to talk about that a little bit. But before we get to that, we need to let you know what happened this past Saturday at Charlotte Motor Speedway. So let's get started. Charlotte Motor Speedway is a 1.5-mile quad oval, and it was ran for 334 laps for 500 miles. There were 24 degrees of banking in the turns and 5 degrees of banking in the straights. So it's a pretty in the turns you get the nice curvature that you need to get ahead. That's why this is a really highly passing track. And it's actually one of my favorites as well. I love Charlotte. I just love 1.5 mile tracks. There it's a lot of fun, especially because it's under the lights, and it's a cool scene to just watch, let alone I've never been there, but it seems like being there, that would be just great energy, especially being at NASCAR's home track. Because we all know that pretty much NASCAR's home city, home state is North Carolina. They call it NAS Carolina for a reason, right? And Charlotte is their main track. It's about 5 miles probably from every important pit garage, like team garage in the area. Hendrick Motorsports, Joe Gibbs Racing, Richard Childress, they're all in either Charlotte or Mooresville, and that's just the next city over. So it's a place where, and this is where most of the racers live as well. So this way, all the wives and their kids and any family that lives nearby all can come out and see this great race. And this is why everyone just loves going to Charlotte so much. So Bank of America 500 had 16 lead changes among 10 drivers and had 8 cautions for about 34 yellow flag laps. The most laps led was Kyle Busch. He led about 111 laps, which is extremely good for starting at the back of the pack. He had an engine change and needed to sit at the back of which means he started at the back of the track. And he made his way up there. He struggled in the beginning, came back, made himself, brought himself back up to lead the most laps. And Tony Stewart was on the pole. The winner of the Bank of America 500 was Matt Kenseth. Now, everyone's probably wondering, who is Matt Kenseth? You've never mentioned him on this show. It's because he's a total sleeper. He is definitely a sleeper, and we're going to talk about him and a little bit more about his chances later on in this show. But this was his 21st career victory, and it was tying him with Jeff Burton, Bobby Labonte, Benny Parsons, and Jack Smith for 30th on the NASCAR's all-time win list. Which is still pretty good, having over 20 wins in the time frame that he's been here. That's extremely good. Wins are really hard to come by. And this was only his second chase victory of his career. And his only other one came back in 2007 at Homestead Miami Speedway, which is the finale track that we go to. So this is pretty good. This is a good win for him because he's not really one to show up when the chase starts. And this was actually is also his fourth consecutive top 10 finish, which we've had 5 races so far. So he finished 21st at the Chase opener at Chicagoland. But and all in all, he's been pretty solid during this chase. He led for 46 laps, three times for 46 laps. So he wasn't the most dominant, but he did have some laps led. Like I said before, Kyle Busch was the most dominant of this race. With this this victory, it puts Roush Fenway Racing to pick up his their 125th Cup Series victory, ranking them fourth all time. That is a milestone. And if you haven't noticed, there's a lot of milestones going on lately, hasn't there? There has been last week with Hendrick Motorsports' 199th career victory, Jimmy Johnson breaking records, having 20 chase wins, most top 10s, Chevrolet getting their tying up that owner's championship for, I believe it's the 8th straight year. I can double check on that. But all in all, it's breaking records left and right is what we're doing. And it's really cool to watch and to be a part of, to see that you can look back and say, I was there or I was watching when Roush Fenway Racing got their 120th career victory, or I'm there, I'll be there when Hendrick Motorsports get their 200th career victory. And it's just cool to just see all this happening and being a part of this kind of history, even if you're behind the television set. Doesn't matter where you are. It's history and you're watching it. So with this victory, though, Matt Kenseth moves up two positions to third in the chase. And this is just 7 points behind leader Carla Edwards. And speaking of points, there's been a lot of shakeups this past week. So let's go through them a little bit. Carla Edwards is still our leader. He has a five-point lead over second place Kevin Harvick, so there hasn't been any movement there. Kevin did lose a couple points ground on Carla Edwards, though. But it's not too much. You can make up 5 points in no time. Matt Kenseth, like I said before, is now third in points. He moves up two positions to now is only 7 points back, which is nothing. We could go to Talladega. Oh, Talladega. That's our next race, and which we all know is the wild card. I'll talk about that in a second as well. And we can go back there, and we can leave, and Matt Kenseth can be the leader. And fourth now is Kyle Busch. Got a big, big jump. He jumped four positions from eighth to fourth. He is now only 18 points behind. And fifth is now Tony Stewart, plus two positions. And he's now 24 points behind. So Tony is digging himself out of the hole. I know I mentioned these drivers have, some of them have been getting into a hole and stuff. But Tony Stewart's starting to climb out of his a little bit, 24 points behind, pretty good. Now he flip-flop places with Brad Keselowski, is now sixth in points, and he's back by only 25 points. You might be asking, where's Jimmy? Yes, he's still coming. He is still coming. In seventh is Kurt Busch now. He is 27 points back. Leader Carl Edwards lost one position. The biggest loser this week was, unfortunately, Jimmy Johnson. He is now eighth in points, 35 points behind leader Carla Edwards. In ninth now is stayed the same. It's Dale Earnhardt Jr. And I'll take a second to talk about these four drivers. Dale Earnhardt Jr., Ryan Newman, Jeff Gordon, and Denny Hamlin, all over 60 points out of this championship. That is clearly way over. Ooh, I said over weird. Way over the one race gap. So I am telling them, unless one of them wins next week, which actually you never know what's happening, they're pretty much out of this chase, just like I talked about last week. But Dale Earnhardt Jr. is in ninth place, 60 points back. There was a little movement back here, though. Ryan Newman is up one position to 10th. He is 61 points back. Jeff Gordon had another dismal day. Unfortunately, you can't have those four dismal days in the chase. It's just not going to work for you. He is now back to 11th, 66 points behind. And even though Denny Hamlin got a top 10 finish, he did finish 9th finally. That's not going to help him when everyone else is doing so much better. He is 86 points behind in 12th place. Now, why am I saying that you never know what's going to happen next week when we go to Talladega? Because Talladega is a wild card. Wild card. I think wild card is actually an understatement to describe Talladega. A couple weeks ago, we talked about restricted plates. We had a big section on there about what restricted plates are. For those NASCAR newbies that are maybe saying, hey, I'm listening to the show. I kind of want to hear what it's about. I kind of want to see what she's talking about. This is the week to watch. Restricted plates are being put in motion for this Talladega race this coming Sunday morning, 10 a.m. on ESPN. It's going to be a great race. I don't know if I'm looking forward to it. Of course, I look forward to every single NASCAR race, but Talladega always puts a little gap in my stomach because you really know what, you never know what's going to happen. Whether they're doing pack driving or this new two-car tango to get ahead, one false move and the whole field can be wiped out. And that's not very settling, let me tell you. It is not very settling to know. And especially me as a Jimmy Johnson fan, this could actually be a great day if he makes it out of Talladega, and he comes out unscathed, and the others ahead of him have some issues. That'll be great. But what if he's back into it and he's in this wreck? If he is in a wreck this weekend at Talladega, you can kiss that sixth championship goodbye, because you can't recover from two big wrecks. So, all in all, you never know. The championship can be won or lost big time here at Talladega. A couple years ago when Jimmy won the championship, a big thing that – it was back in 2009. Mark Martin was running for this chase, and they were neck and neck for this chase, 1-2. Jimmy made it out of a wreck, barely. Mark Martin did not make it, and his car got flipped. He crashed on it when he was on the roof of his car, and that pretty much kissed all of his championship hopes right out the window. You never know what's going to happen at Talladega. I hate having it in the chase because it is such a wild card, but you know what? That makes good racing, right? Well, supposedly. Me, good racing is just seeing something good. And seeing some hard racers, and the one who has the best card comes out the leader. And like it kind of relates to field mileage. How I don't like field mileage races, because you never know what's going to happen. And you never know it comes down to whoever can conserve the best. This one, it's all down to luck. And that's what the bottom line is. And I don't think racing should come down to luck. So we'll just have to see how Talladega pans out. Hopefully everyone would come out unscathed. But you just never know when it's Talladega. It's such a wild card. All I'm crossing my fingers now is that I know with the technologies of these cars, that hopefully just everyone comes out okay when they have these big wrecks. Because yes, it's not, these cars aren't as dangerous as an IndyCar, but if you watch the Sunday's IndyCar race, a total heartbreak seeing Dan Weldon pass away in that wreck. And so you just never know what's going to happen every time you hop into that race car. And Talladega is a big example of that. Talladega, Daytona, because of their high banking tracks, the speeds are just so high. And then having to restrict these speeds for the safety of fans and putting these restrictor plates in, it bunches up the drivers. So, yes, we might be we might have some safer fans now, but now there's more in jeopardy with the and within the drivers, because they go at such these high speeds all together. One false move and your day is done. Or someone else's false move can ruin your day, or, God forbid, end your life. So you really just never know when it comes to these kind of races. They're always very, very exciting, but also very nerve-wracking. But, you know, with the technology NASCAR has had, they have these safer barriers, which are barriers around the track that are kind of like foam that'll lessen the impact of a hit, which is always great. And then with the Hans device, which is something that drivers put around their neck that puts their neck into place. So when they get in these huge wrecks, and their head knocks around a little bit, it's not going to affect them. It's not going to break their neck or cause any kind of difficulties in that kind of way. So there's so many more technologies out there that will save a driver, especially in NASCAR, because the cars are so big. It's a little bit harder to have some serious injuries in these wrecks. But you know what? Serious injuries do happen. Brad Keselowski broke his ankle. And, yeah, a broken ankle isn't as bad as something of a head trauma or something to that sort. But it's still an injury. And so injuries do happen. And so every time we come to Talladega, we always just got to look at that and just know that it's always a possibility of happening, really, at any track. But when you come to a place like Talladega and Daytona, where the speeds are restricted like they are, restricted plate racing, it is always, it's nerve-wracking. And you just never know what's going to happen. So we'll see how that pans out. So after the break, we're going to discuss more about Matt Kenseth and his chances of becoming the 2011 champion. Then we're also going to highlight a few other notable Chase drivers to see what happened in their days. This is The Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Ray Ray, and I'll be right back. Welcome back to The Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Ray Ray. So, let's take a little time to highlight a few of the Chase drivers about their days and see how they ended up in the Chase after the Charlotte Motor Speedway Banker America 500 this past Saturday at Charlotte Motor Speedway Saturday night. So Matt Kenseth will start. He won his first. He won the race, as we see, and I'm going to take a little moment to talk about his new championship hopes. He won his, he is a past champion. He won his first championship, first and only championship, might I add, in 2003. He won this race based on consistency. Now, what do I mean by that? In that whole 2003 season, he only had one win. Who can win a championship on one win? What kind of rate, how could someone have that much how can someone have that much consistency? And that's what Matt Kenseth showed. He didn't, with that point system at the time, it was a way that you could have these consistent top five, top 10 finishes, and you can come out the champion even if you didn't even have a win. And NASCAR saw this, and the second that Matt Kenseth won this championship back in 2003, they changed it up. They changed that to what we now know as the Chase. NASCAR saw right away, they're like, we need some excitement to this race, back into this NASCAR, NASCAR sport, motorsport. And we just need something to mix it up so it doesn't happen where a championship contender can win the actual championship with only one win. And so that's what they did. They changed the format to what we see it is now. Now there's been many changes throughout the years, but what has stayed consistent is this top 10, top 12 chase, where only the top 10 or 12 make it. Now, there has been, like I just said, many changes, point changes, how many points you get. There used to be thousands and thousands of points each year. Now, it's only not even hundreds of there's still thousands of points, but now it's only like 2,000 points, 3,000 points, instead of like how it used to be with the 6,000 etc. like that. And they made it more easier for racers and race fans to understand how all these how many points you get. So instead of getting 143 points every race the max points you can get now is 48 points. So they just they lowered the point scales and stuff, but there's been a lot of changes, and it all comes down back to that 2003 season where Matt so you can call Matt the game changer, because they saw that they're just like, you can't win on one race. You can't win a championship by winning just one race. It can't be like that anymore. So since that happened, Matt hasn't really even been in the title hunt. He actually was since 2006, where Jimmy Johnson became the eventual first time champion. So Jimmy won his first championship back in 2006, and his main competitor was Matt Kenseth. To tell you the truth, Matt hasn't looked good. He hasn't looked in championship, champion ready since that time. Well, until now. Matt has creeped up into the 2011 Chase for the Championship, Sprint Cup Series Championship. He has 3 wins, which is extremely good for him, because usually if not any wins, he gets maybe 1, if not none, no race wins. And so, to tell you the truth, I say his chances to win the championship are as good as any. They're looking pretty good, seeing that he is only 7 points out of this championship. And that's nothing. Yes, I said last week when Jimmy was 4 points out, that's nothing. Watch out. Jimmy's going to be the next. I was expecting him to be the point standing leader this past weekend. We all see that didn't happen. So you never know what happens, especially when Talladega looms, like I just talked about before the break, how we just never know. So you know what? Matt Kenseth could be at the bottom of this pylon at the end of the Talladega race, but we don't know. But past 5 races in these so far in the Chase, we are officially halfway. He's been doing pretty successful, and he's good as in this as anyone else is in this championship. Someone else we'd like to highlight on is Kyle Busch. Now, I haven't really talked about Kyle Busch that much on the show. I have a little bit, but he had a good day. He changed his engine before the race, which meant that he had to start last in the 43-car field. And although he was initially frustrated with his car, he was able to rally to the race lead and lead a race high 111 laps and finish second, which is his best showing in the chase so far. Now, what did Kyle Busch had to say about his race run? I took a little quote for what he said in post-race. He just flat out drove right past me like I was standing still. The frustration is, again, we did not finish where we wanted to, which could have been a real win, a real highlight. So Kyle Busch is really never satisfied unless he's in the victory lane. I mean, the man has 50 wins in all between just in the Nationwide Series. Guy's amazing. He's just amazing. It's really hard to explain what Kyle Busch is. His attitude, he's always had this really bad attitude. It's gotten better over the years to the point where it's turning more into funny, and he's much more entertaining, and it's fun to watch him drive. But it's a crazy stat that I just found out is Kyle has never won a chase race before, which is unbelievable. This guy wins all the time, yet not once has he won a chase race. And that's especially surprising, seeing back in the 2008 series season, he had 8 wins, yet he went 10 straight weeks without a race win in those 10 chase races. And 2008 was also a Jimmy Johnson championship year, and Jimmy battled against Carl Edwards and Kyle Busch both for that championship, but no wins, and that is extremely surprising to me. So maybe he'll be able to break that streak. He's never won at Talladega. He's never even finished second place at Talladega. He has finished third place at Talladega a few times. But at these kind of restricted plate races that's coming up, Kyle Busch is always a factor unless he gets into the big one, which is the big wreck or the couple big wrecks that we see at Talladega and come to expect at Talladega every year. Next driver we like to highlight is Carl Edwards. He is our championship points leader at the moment. He leads Kevin Harvick and Matt Kenseth. Kevin Harvick by 5 points, like I said before. Matt Kenseth by 7 points. Carl Edwards had a good day. He finished third. But his main headline, why I wanted to highlight him, is because Robin is racing, right? Well, he finished third, but in those closing laps, he had some hard racing with Kyle Busch. And those NASCAR veterans out there, you might be going, not again. I swear, these two cannot keep away from each other. Carl Edwards, Kyle Busch, they are pretty much the rivals, entertainment of the century of this new Chase NASCAR era. They're always into it. Ever since that 2008 Chase, they just don't get along, I guess you can say. But Kyle has had his few run-ins in the past with some drivers, Carl Edwards, Kevin Harvick, even Jimmy Johnson a couple weeks ago. Let's pretty much just say Kyle Busch has a long list of people he does not really like. And Carl and him are kind of have that. They have like a love-hate kind of relationship going on. But Carl didn't like how Kyle was racing him, and this is what he had to say about that. Carl Edwards here took a quote. It says, "We should definitely be racing each other hard. It's just that there's a difference between racing hard and then cutting across the guy's nose. I just let him know that the next time that happens, I'll just stay where I'm at, and he can drive across my hood and wreck himself." And that was the Carl Edwards saying that now, because after the race, Carl did not want Kyle to just go on with his life and say, oh, okay, I can cut across my Carl Edwards hood anytime. Carl won't let people stomp on him. He jumped out of his car and got into, before Kyle Busch was able to, got inside his car just to stuck his head in through the window just to let him know that next time that happens, he might have gotten away with it next time that happens, he's not going to be that nice, and he's just going to stay there and watch as Kyle Busch wrecks himself into that wall. So that's pretty entertaining, I guess you can say. Yeah, everyone loves to see a nice fight or wreck in NASCAR, right? That's what most people say. Why do you like NASCAR unless they're wrecking or fighting? But there is more to NASCAR than just the wrecks and the fights, which we've come to see on this show. Finally, I'm going to highlight a little bit about Jimmy Johnson. I've kind of here and there mentioned him. We all by now know he had a very dismal day. Now, he finished ninth. He started strong, struggled a little bit, but he was able to get to the front. He even was battling for second. He was going to be in this race to the end, fighting for that, fighting with Matt Kenseth and Carl Edwards and Kyle Busch for that victory. But what happened? Like we talked about last week, remember how I said crew chiefs, they there's always one call could make or break their day. They could be end up in victory lane or end up in the end up with the wrecker. Jimmy ended up with the wrecker. Chad Knaus calls him in, calls everyone in during the caution. During the caution comes out, everyone goes down pit road. Everyone takes two tires. Chad takes four tires. Now, what does that mean? It means a slower pit stop. With a two-tire stop, you only got to shave off about 6 seconds because you just need to change two tires. So you get about a 6 to 7 second pit stop. But if you're doing a four-tire, then you get about a 12 to 13 second pit stop, which is good, of course, for four tires. But when everyone else takes two, that means you're not going to restart where you ended up. So if Jamie comes in second and everyone in front of everyone behind him takes two and he takes four, he's not going to come out second. He's going to come out about 17th, 18th, 19th, which is the area that he did come out in. And you can say, well, he has four tires. He can just blow by anyone and everyone. But at this certain track, especially since the repavement, they haven't really needed to change four tires every time because they've gotten good enough grip where the tires aren't affected as much. And seeing this, you don't really need to take the four tires every time because your grip level is going to stay the same and there's not going to be any fall off. And Jimmy needs that fall off for the two-tire drive for those cars that have the two cars, because if they fall off with their two tires, that means they're going to pretty much have no tires. And Jimmy's going to have these four tires that have fallen off, but he still has two extra stronger tires and he can pass by everyone. But that didn't happen. Jimmy was marred pretty much back in that area. He finally made himself all the way back up to seventh with 11 laps to go. Good top 10. I was going to be happy with that. But he got into a sticky situation where it was three wide. He got loose. He got a little bit loose on the outside, tried to save it. Going in at 200 miles per hour, a little less than that, probably about 180, 190 miles per hour, slamming right into the outside wall. Hard hit, probably the hardest Jimmy has ever taken. Thank the Lord that he's okay. It was the hardest thing. That's what just happens. He got loose, hardest hit he ever took. And the first thing Chad now said when that happened was, first, of course, buddy, you okay? But the second was, sorry, guys, that was my fault today. Chad knew he should have taken two tires at one time, but he called for a four-tire stop. And let's say that Jimmy is not able to recover. 35 points is hard to cover. He has done it before, though. In 2006 season, he was able to come back with a lot of woes. So, you know, you can never write the 48 off. But say at the end of the season, they're not holding up that trophy and not collecting their sixth consecutive championship, we know for sure that Chad Knaus is going to look back to race five where he decided for Jimmy to take four tires instead of two. And he's going to say that that was the call that cost him this championship. So after the break, we're going to get into our garage talk and we're going to talk about Dan Weldon, the former IRL IndyCar champion who lost his life this past Sunday at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. What a tragedy it is. So that's what we're going to talk about. This is The Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu and we'll be right back.
This moment in the back of my mind, the time we stood with our shaking hands, the crowds and stands went wild. We were the kings and the queens, and they read off our names. The night you danced like you knew our lives would never be the same. You held your head like a hero on a history book page. It was the end of decade, but the start of an age. Long live.
Welcome back to the Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Ray Ray. Dan Weldon, he just passed away this past Sunday at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway Indy 300 race. It was the series finale. It was the series championship finale. It was supposed to be a great day full of happiness, crowning the new champion, who was, I believe, going to be Dario Franchi, I believe. I'll double check on who is the champion on that. But it was supposed to, bottom line, it was supposed to be a great day. And that was marred by this tragic accident. But I want to take a few minutes to first just tell you a little bit who Darren Weldon is, and before we get into his life-ending accident. Darren Weldon came to the United States from England in 1999, and he won 16 times in his IndyCar career, and was the series champion, actually, in 2005. And he is also a two-time Brickyard 500 winner. And what I mean by that is, and it's the saddest part, he won in 2005, and he also won in 2011, this past race. And the crazy part is, he didn't have a full-time year. He did not have a full-time ride this season. He has only been able to get into three races. He was only able to get into three races. This was his third race. But at the Brickyard, he got in, and he's just racing. Hopefully, of course, everyone wants to win, but he was just blessed to be racing to actually find a ride. And he came out the winner, and that was just a crazy great day. I remember watching that on TV. It was the last lap. J.R. Hildebrand, he is actually from here, from this, believe Marin County area, and he was going into turn four on the last lap. J.R. Hildebrand, rookie, was going to go and win this Indy 500. It was going to be a great day, but he overdrove the corner and ended up in the wall, and as he got in the wall, Darren Weldon got around him and won this Indy 500. So, yes, I was heartbroken that J.R. Hildebrand did not win because he's from this area. He's a Bay Area boy. And, of course, I always got to root for those that are that have grown up in the same around the same area within an hour or two from me. But seeing Darren Weldon win, that was just – it was just as great as seeing someone like J.R. Hildebrand win because just because of the impact. He had no idea he was going to win. He was just a sleeper. He just ran, and it was just randomly won. And the sad part is he still was not able to get a third a full-time ride after that. But he was fine with them. He was fine. Just keep on searching. Keep on giving hope. And so that's how that was. But he actually married his longtime personal assistant, Susie Bem, who was from British Columbia, Canada, in 2008. And they have two sons. So Weldon does leave behind a wife and two sons. His first son was born in 2009, and his other one was just born this past March of 2011. So he's leaving some newborns, and it's just extremely sad how Susie's gonna have to get through this, and our hearts and prayers are always with her. Despite winning this year's Indy 500, Weldon just still could not put a full-time ride together this season. But he was able to get this ride racing in Las Vegas on the same team as Alex Tagliani. And you might be wondering, how did he get this ride? Well, he landed this race thanks to IndyCar CEO Randy Bernard's promise of a $5 million prize to any moonlighting driver, which is someone just that doesn't normally, that isn't a full-time driver, to come in and win this IndyCar finale. So someone like from NASCAR coming on, Casey Kane actually was thinking about taking up his offer and driving in this car before his new owner, Rick Kendrick, shot him down and said, you can't do that because this is extremely dangerous. And as you can see, Rick Kendrick was extremely right. But there were no takers. So Bernard didn't scrap the plan and declared that Weldon was eligible for the prize if he wanted to race. And of course, Weldon jumped at the chance. So we'll talk a little bit about this Indy 300 at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Many worried about this this race going in because Vegas is a very high banking track, and they worried that having these cars go so fast on such a short track would be extremely dangerous. They were going up to an average of 225 miles per hour. That is fast. These cars are fast, and that is extremely dangerous to go in such a short distance with such high banking at these speeds. Especially now, I could understand maybe some of the veterans participating in this and being able to control their speeds and doing that, like the likes of Dario Franchitti, or someone like that. And even Weldon was ready up for the challenge. Weldon was actually just up in the wrong place on the wrong time, to tell you the truth. But when you get these rookies in here and these part-timers in here that aren't ready to race like this, it just gets very dangerous. There was a 15-car pileup on lap 11 where these two drivers just slightly touched their tires when racing, because they were going about three wide. It was crazy. And all of a sudden they end up in the wall and a huge thing just explodes. And this huge 15-car pileup explodes. Dan Weldon was just right in the middle of that. His car flipped. He flipped upside down into the catch fence of turn two. His car did catch fire, and it was extremely scary to watch. I wasn't watching it live, but I looked at but I was able to see the wreck again on the power of YouTube, right? And I was able to see what happened, and it's just my mouth was just open. I was just dropped. It was this crazy crash, and there was a two-hour red flag until they announced the sad news. So what happened was, after the wreck occurred, they called all the drivers into a red flag, so they all had to go into pit road because it looked like a war field out there. There was wreckage, tires, parts and pieces everywhere. It was just like a war field. Some people, Danica Patrick, this was her last full-time race as an IndyCar driver before she switches to NASCAR next year, and she rode around just saying she could not never see it looked like it was a war field. Like, she had never seen anything like that before in her life. And so immediately medical officials were to the scene, and they were frantically waving for help over at Walden's because they just saw right away that it was not going to be good. He was airlifted to a hospital, and it took over 2 hours for them to finally announce the news. His cause of death was just revealed today, which was blunt force trauma to the head. He had an autopsy done. And it's just really just a extremely sad news to have to swallow. So the IndyCar officials, it's sad, but it's just a beautiful part. What IndyCar officials and drivers decided, that the race would be abandoned. So they canceled the race, and seeing that it was a season finale race, they canceled it, and they took the points from the previous week's standings, and they called that was going to be the final, and that was with Dario Franchitti having over 20-point lead and winning this, his third championship. But they had a 5-lap salute to be held in Weldon's honor, and they placed his 77, which was his number, displayed alone top the scoring pylon. So it was his lone number as they did the 5-lap salute. Extremely sad. Many drivers, owners, friends, anyone that was there was very, it was very openly sad. People just were crying. It was just a sad moment in IndyCar that's going to affect them for many of the times to come, to tell you the truth. Because now it's going to go back to, right now, IndyCar isn't giving any answers to the questions they're asking. They're simply just saying, you know what, right now we just want to focus on how sad it is that Dan Weldon has passed away, and then just going off of that. But you know what? Soon fans and more officials are going to want to know, what are you going to change about this? What is going to be different so that this does not happen again? And hopefully the IndyCar does not just brush it off the shoulders, because this is something that needs to be addressed, because this shouldn't have happened. And they should have known that going 225 miles per hour on such a short track with such high bankings would be extremely dangerous. So now I'm going to just gonna read off a little bit of the quotes and a little bit of what drivers and others have reacted. This has been a worldwide shakeup. IndyCar and NASCAR especially have been brought to the attention of what has happened. And a lot of them have taken to their Twitter accounts or to just interviews on track of what of their feelings. And I'm going to just start it off with Jimmy Johnson has stated that my thoughts and prayers go out to the Weldon family. My heart hurts for all of the IRL community. But that was on Jimmy's Twitter account. But he was not done talking. On Monday, in this is, and it's kind of ironic that it was Jimmy who said this, especially because Jimmy did get in his big wreck on Saturday, and it was extremely hard, his biggest hit he's ever taken, and he was able to get out of the car and go back to work Monday. He was a little sore, but I mean, who wouldn't be? But he straight up said that I wouldn't run them on ovals. He's talking about these Indy cars. There's just not no need to. Those cars are fantastic for street circus, for road courses. I hate that this tragedy took place. But hopefully they can learn from it and make those cars safer on ovals somehow. I don't know how they can really do it. Myself, I have a lot of friends that race in these not series, and I just rather see them on street circuits and road courses. No more ovals. And that is, and I agree completely. These cars are just, I think one exception could be the Indy 500, but these cars are, I'm surprised that they do run them on oval, but these are great, seeing them on road courses, street courses, where they have these left and right turns, and it's fun to see that. And I think that Indy car really needs to take that into consideration now, seeing that this has happened. But Jimmy also had stated that this is the exact reason why he has always wanted to participate in the Indy 500. It's always been a dream of his. But when his daughter was born, just this last August of 2010, he had to make a promise to his wife, Shani, that he would never run that race because of the high dangers that that happens when you're on an oval in one of these fast racing cars. So Jimmy isn't going to get into an Indy 500 car. I mean, Indy car anytime soon on an oval track. And he made that promise. And this right here just brought that promise to reality, because Dan has two newborns, pretty much newborns. One born 2009, one born this past 2011. Left his wife, and it's just really sad. Juan Pablo Montoya, he used to ride in the IndyCar series and Formula One series. Juan Pablo's been everywhere in racing. He made his way to NASCAR. He's probably one of the most successful in NASCAR. And he simply states, life's not fair. And it's extremely true. Life is just not fair sometimes. Casey Kane said, I just think about his family and his friends and things they're probably going through. I woke up this morning and that was all that was on my mind. IndyCar driver James Hinchcliffe states, it's a bad day. It's a black day for the sport. We came in here hoping for a good season finale and ended up losing a very close friend and a very good driver. Next is Dario Franchitti, who is actually one of very extremely close with Dan Weldon. We put so much pressure on ourselves to win races and championships that what we do, and that's what we love to do, what we live for. Days like today, it doesn't really matter. I lost, we lost a good friend. Everybody in IndyCar considered Dan a friend. You saw that, saw what that reaction was. Dan was one of those special, special people from when he first showed up at IndyCar. Next is Chip Ganassi. He is owner of Chip Ganassi Racing, which is Weldon's former team and IndyCar. And Chip Ganassi Racing is also in NASCAR as well. And he states, we are all going to miss him. A little bit of everyone, of everybody in NASCAR in IndyCar racing has died today. Next is IndyCar driver Oriol Servia. He states, I feel so bad for Susie and their kids. It's so tough to understand when somebody is gone that quickly. Dan was always a very happy guy. He was always smiling. He was a funny, great person that touched a lot of people. He will be missed. IndyCar driver J.R. Hildebrand, who actually was also injured in this wreck. He was released and he's okay. He was in the hospital, but he was airlifted to a hospital as well. He states, what a tremendously sad day. My thoughts are with the entire Weldon family. Dan's passion for IndyCar racing will sorely be missed. Chris Powell, the president of Las Vegas Motor Speedway, where this tragedy took place, states, all of us here at Las Vegas Motor Speedway are deeply saddened by the death of Dan Weldon. He was a tremendous race car driver and a representative for the IndyCar racing. Our prayers are with the Dan's family, as well as the officials and sponsors of IndyCar. Next is popular driver Danica Patrick. Danica was clearly probably the most vocal of being of the drivers that in this race that have shown their sadness was Dario Franchitti and Danica Patrick. They were both visually crying right when the news hit after the 5-lap salute. It was very, very sad. And she states, there's just no words for today. Myself and so many others are devastated. I pray for Susie and the kids that God will give them strength. NASCAR driver Denny Hamlin states, today was a reminder to all of us what happens every time we strap behind the wheel. At times I think that we take all these things for granted. Life shouldn't be one of those things. We lost a great driver in motorsports, and he will not be forgotten. Rest in peace, Dan Walden. Dale Earnhardt Jr. States, and Dale Earnhardt Jr., before I say what he has said about Dan, knows exactly what Susie and her kids are going to be, mostly Susie, because the kids are so young, they won't be able to really to know what is happening, but especially what Susie is feeling at the moment, because Dan, back 10 years ago, Dale Earnhardt Jr. lost his own father, Dale Sr., in that tragic 2001 Daytona 500. Now, he was asked if he'd like to share what they're feeling, and Dale declined, which is understandable. It's a very personal feeling that he just did not want to express. It's just 10 years later, it's still, of course, very hard when you lose your father. But he states, I had the pleasure of meeting Dan Walden at a National Guard Youth Challenge dinner about 5 years ago, and we crossed paths several times since then, mostly through our mutual partnership with the National Guard. His success as a racer speaks for itself, but I will remember him as a true professional who was friendly, respectful, and genuine. On behalf of everyone at Junior Motorsports, I send condolences to Dan's family, team, and friends in the racing community. Trevor Bayne, our 2011 Daytona 500 champion, states, I'm sick to my stomach right now over Dan Walden. I just hung out with him a month ago, and he was such an awesome guy with so much life in him. And lastly, Jeff Gordon states, spent a little time with Dan Walden several years ago in Paris for Race of Champions. Great guy, great driver, will certainly be missed. And also, I'd like to say, actually something that Dario also stated was just before they hopped in those cars, they were spending time laughing and having a great time, catching up on old times and just laughing on the pit road. They strapped into those cars, and Dario would never think that that was going to be the last communication he was going to have with Dan Walden. It was a horribly sad day in all motorsports, but that is how we're going to end our show today. This is The Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu, and we'll see you guys next week.
You got that smile.